Hello, welcome to Press TV News Analysis. I'm Kavita Afwe. Global crude prices, the highest levels in 9 months, at over $123 per barrel. Ask anyone, and the first answer is due to the West tensions with Iran, in which Western nation has initiated this friction, leading sanctions against Iran, and asking countries not to buy Iranian oil while positioning its warships in the Persian Gulf, the United States. In this news analysis, we'll look at the cost this U.S.-led initiative has had to not only the U.S. itself, but the world.
Oil prices in world markets have soared to around 9 months' highs in recent weeks. The price hikes came immediately after Iran announced it had stopped selling oil to France and Britain. This, over the European Union's unilateral sanctions on Iranian oil, over Tehran's nuclear energy program. Tehran has also threatened to turn off the oil tap to other European countries who've adopted a hostile stance toward Iran.
Iran has never in its history used oil as a political tool. This was a game the Europeans started, and unfortunately, European leaders acted against their national interests.
Tehran has set new terms for the EU countries who want to buy its oil. They need to sign long-term contracts to import Iranian oil, and payment for the oil will have to be made immediately. This will put further strain on EU member states who are already knee-deep into a fiscal crisis not seen in decades.
This has obviously got a massive impact on the global economy. It's going to be far easier to get out of difficult economic times if oil is around sort of 80. When we're talking oil at 120, it's very difficult for families in many countries where they're already having a squeeze on their incomes.
Iran has frequently announced it does not intend to put further pressure on European citizens during the cold season. However, measures by European leaders have forced Iranian officials to resort to oil as a means to counter the West's pressure. The world's leading oil trader, Vital, has said an increase in world oil prices has more than compensated Iran for revenues lost due to lower crude exports. The Swiss-based company has also warned that if tensions escalate, crude prices could spike above $150. History has shown that decades of sanctions against Iran have failed to weaken the Iranian resolve to attain its legitimate rights. Iran's peaceful responses to hostile acts have consistently undone the perpetrators' plans.
Well, let me introduce our guest for this edition of the News Analysis to discuss this further. From the Center for Global Energy Studies, Manuchehr Tekin joins us from London. And we have writer and journalist Joshua Blakeney, who joins us from Calgary, Canada. Gentlemen, welcome. Mr. Tekin, first to you, basic question, who is at fault for driving the oil prices to the current level and why? Mr. Tekin, if you have me, who is at fault for driving the oil prices to the current level and why?
Well, you have already explained in your introduction, it is the fear of disruption of supply of oil from Iran to European countries that has been because of the 23rd January, the ministers in the European Union passed a resolution or an order that the European companies should not buy from oil from Iran. Of course, they allowed a grace period of 6 months, but that idea that there would be less oil coming from Iran into European markets, there will be a disruption. European refineries have to find another source of oil for the refineries. That oil might not fit exactly the quality which they required, and the refineries had been designed and used for years for the Iranian crude, and so on and so forth. These are the causes that the market, the people who are need oil for their operations, airlines, other refineries, and so on, they think that this disruption, disturbance in the global oil network of transportation, buying and selling, which is going on all the time, this disturbance would cause a delay, definitely of several weeks, maybe a few months, until things get back to normal. And that causes the price go up of the disturbance of actual physical oil. There is also a psychological story behind it that The traders and others fear that this tit for tat might become larger. It will lead to further disruption, other stories. So the fear of unknown is another factor, the psychological impact, the perception that something else might happen, Iran might react, etc., etc. That is another factor which is also causing the price of oil going up.
Okay, you skimmed over something that is not highlighted, and that is the quality of Iranian oil. If you can expand on that more, and how the refineries in Europe and other countries that buy from Iran are used to that quality.
Well, this is a standard thing in oil practice. Usually, each refinery is designed for a particular type of crude. The pressure of the distillation column, the various valves, pumps, and so on, the overall design of it is optimized so that it takes a particular crude and designed for that. It maximizes the production of output of gasoline, that is petrol, diesel, and so on. If there is a different type of crude, that refinery has to be adjusted. Its pressures, pumps, temperature breaks, and so on have to be adjusted. It could be a major investment that they have to do. It could be minor, and operations have to be adjusted and changed the various control parameters, equipment, and so on. So definitely there will be a disruption time-wise that this refinery, in order to switch, would be out of action for some time. And in some cases, if there is a major difference between the crude which was used before and the new crude, there may be actually a major investment. They have to spend a lot of money on it.
Okay.
And these are practical reasons of why, if there's a change of crude, it will adversely affect the operation of that refinery.
Joshua Agnew, the U.S. has stated that in order to stop the possibility of Iran militarizing its nuclear program, sanctions need to be imposed, and hence has asked both Europe and China to readjust its oil purchases amongst some of the countries. Is that logical, asking them, in essence, to embargo themselves?
No, it's ridiculous and ludicrous. I mean, for these nations that are constantly championing and extolling the virtues of free market capitalist economics, these governments in Europe and the United States seem to be astoundingly ignorant of the basic principles of supply and demand. There is a huge demand for Iranian oil. And when the US and Europe decide to act in such a hostile way against their national interests and impose sanctions upon Iran, Iran will just circumvent them and sell their oil to other consumers, other customers on the market. China is still trading with Iran. India is willing to purchase Iranian oil. And even more peripheral countries like Tajikistan are now purchasing Iranian oil. And so the days where the United States and European countries, you know, Uncle Sam and Johnny Bull, can push around the indigenous people of the Middle East are over. As I've said on your show previously, we're living in a multipolar world, not a unipolar world now, which I think is really a good thing. And we're seeing this, expressing itself in Iran's ability to weather the sanctions that are being imposed upon it. As your newsreel said, the Vitol, the world's most significant oil trader, has warned of the negative implications for Western oil companies of this crazed Middle East policy, which, as we know, is emerging from the Israeli hard right in the 1980s. The Likud party in Israel formulated the Sharon doctrine of destabilizing the Middle East, which was a tectonic shift from the traditional U.S. Middle East policy of propping up Middle East leaders and purchasing their oil. And so this destabilization policy that we're seeing being visited upon the people of Syria isn't working with Iran, because Iran is able to defend itself, is able to stand up to those global hegemons and trade with other countries, which I think is positive for the planet. Indeed, the EU sanctions were only supposed to be instigated or initiated from July 1st, 2012. And yet, Iran has themselves now said that they're not going to trade oil with six EU nation states. And so, if anything, it's Iran who's upping the ante, because Iran knows that actually they don't need to be bossed around anymore by the European states and the United States. And
right.
It's interesting that you should mention the quality of oil, because, of course, I'm here in Calgary, where there's very dirty tar sands. And we're beginning to see the U.S. shift from purchasing cleaner crude oil to this kind of dirty tar sands. And in Canada, there are many individuals who are partisan to the State of Israel, you know, pro-Israel lobbyists, are highly supportive of this tar sands project that is environmentally detrimental because they want to see the U.S. not be reliant on Middle East oil and European countries not to be reliant on Middle East oil and instead purchase this dirty oil from Canada. And so this is the reality of the day, and I'm quite pleased to see that Iran's able to weather this storm.
Okay, let me introduce Brent Podolsky. He's a columnist at The Hill who joins us right now to bring him into this conversation. Brent Podolsky, welcome. Let me ask you, U.S. gas prices have jumped 8.8% since the start of this year, topping an average of $3.65 a gallon in the week through Monday. This is a record for this time of the year, isn't it, when prices are usually on the low side because of slow seasonal demand? What could be the rising gas prices for a teetering U.S. economy?
Well, number one, historically, you're right. The gas prices are higher than they have ever been at this point in the year. They will go up historically. They always have, going into what we call the summer driving season on Memorial Day and into June. It will be a very bad event for the American economy if it continues. I hope it doesn't, but I worry it will. At a time when the American economy is showing some signs of growth. And it will be a bad thing as well, obviously, for the European economy and the world economy if the United States slows down. Now, I want to add one other thing to what my colleagues have said, much of which I agree with, not all of it, but much of it. One of the problems we have now is the unbelievable speculation in markets, both for gas and for futures and for oil, especially since the Federal Reserve Board and now the European banks have put so much money and cash into the system. A lot of that ends up in speculation, which drives prices up. And it makes every bad trend even worse, and every damage becomes even more damaging. So the speculation is a real problem. I wish the governments, particularly the United States, would do more against the hyperspeculation. And in all honesty, I hope all of the governments from Iran, Israel, Europe, the United States, China, Russia, and Asia would do more to create political and economic solutions to eliminate some of the winds of war that are driving up prices and that are blowing right now, and to reduce some of the tensions that make things worse for everyone.
Correct. Well, Mr. Tachin, not that Iran wanted to take this route, announcing a possible ban on these 6 year zone countries, then deciding to cut oil exports to French and British companies. The world's leading oil trader, our guest there from Calgary, mentioned Vital. Vital has said Iran has earned more from its crude output due to an increase in global oil prices. I mean, it seems pretty obvious who the winners and losers are here. Can you tell us that? Who the winners are and who the losers are, matter of speaking?
Well, I think the losers are everybody in the oil business, the companies, but more the consumers who have to pay higher prices. I think putting politics aside, that I am no expert, others have already commented. I think oil business should be left really to free markets, as is the motto in the so-called West. And political interference would distort it. You see, oil is being bought and sold around the world, on the globe, with a large network of where oil is produced, different refineries around the world, and ships and tankers moving around. And this whole network is in dynamic equilibrium, and it is optimized naturally by the process of different buyers and sellers altogether. So oil goes from A to B to where it is the most suitable for that refinery, and the transportation is also optimized and so on. So disturbing this by a policy imperative, I think, is not welcome by the oil business people themselves. They want to continue along the line that they were doing. That, I think, is itself the factor which I explained at the beginning causes the price of oil going up. And there is a speculation because people fear that, this is not mentioned explicitly, but it is fear that this tit-for-tat and reactions might lead to further disruption. Unfortunately, there are worst-case scenarios. There could be, as there have been, threats of military action, skirmishes, and so on and so forth. And so everybody has to, people have to pay higher prices. That is all I can say, that it will be ideal if oil business is left to itself. You see, I worked in the OPEC in Vienna for many years, and OPEC was unfortunately and wrongly accused of having the 1973 oil embargo. That was a particular only one case, and that was by Arab countries, and it was a war with the Israelis, and Arabs were fighting each other, and on a temporary basis, Arabs put an embargo. But that story has been always finger pointing at producers and OPEC that they mix politics with oil. And now we are seeing in the last few years interference of politics into oil business, not from the producers, but from the consumers and major powers and so on. Unfortunately, oil has become a policy tool, a public policy tool and foreign policy tool. All I can say that this is really regrettable. It has to be left to the market and that optimized finding where the best source and that particular refinery and the world at the free market, it will adjust itself and find the best solution, the optimum solution. I think it should not be disturbed and there should not be interference. They will all at the end, you see, with this disturbance of the Iran supply to European refineries and others, this disturbance will go on for several months. But at the end, a year or so later, the European refineries, they will find some other source and Iran will find other purchasers and will go back to normal. It would not be the end of the world. But meanwhile, everybody will be suffering.
Right. But you make a couple of good points there, Mr. Tackin. Joshua Blakely, Mr. Tackin talked about how, the market should be the one that should be dictating the amount of oil that each country needs. So when I asked him about the winners and losers, he mentioned, well, it's the consumers, it's the average people, whether it's in the United States or in Europe, for example, that are the ones that are the losers, because they're the ones that are paying the high price. Why is it then that the United States-led sanctions, which started this leading to Iran's decision, do you believe that that was a right move, using, in a sense, oil as a political tool in order for them to have this pressure exerted on Iran in terms of what they deem the militarization of its nuclear program?
No, it's completely irrational. I mean, if the US government or the British government or European governments were actually interested in their people, they would obviously want to do commercial dealings with Iran. They have no interest in being hostile to a prominent country in the world like Iran. I think it's important what your friend mentioned, the other guest mentioned about the OPEC oil embargo in 1973. This is an important historical event that we have to understand in order to understand what's going on today. In 1973, the Arab states and Persian state were able to show the world that they were able to actually have some sway over the U.S. government. And this was, of course, in relation to Israel and the Yom Kippur War at that time. And I think that what happened in 1973 was a rude awakening for the Israeli government. And I think since then, we've seen a policy where Israel has tried to do their very best to defund Middle East regimes, defund and weaken and take funds away from Middle East governments so they don't have the ability to be emboldened and stand up for themselves. And so I think that, as your friends suggested, this is actually jeopardizing U.S. oil interests significantly. And U.S. oil companies are increasingly upset with what their government are doing, which does lead us to the Israeli elephant in the room. The pro-Israel lobby has been lobbying for a policy for the last 20 or 30 years, which actually runs against the traditional U.S. Middle East interests. Suncor, for example, a prominent oil company based here in Calgary, just withdrew from Syria. How is this destabilization of the Middle East benefiting oil companies? Clearly, it is not. And so I think that we can't really understand what's going on in terms of oil markets unless we understand that this isn't actually being motivated by oil companies primarily. This is being motivated by a crazed ethnic nationalist state in the Middle East that's acting like any ethnic nationalist state is, in a highly irrational and unenlightened manner. And I think that's where politics meets economics. And I'm not myself a champion of free market economics. I'm for state-owned oil companies. But certainly, this is running against the traditional policy that these governments nominally support, which is free market economics. This is a state intervention in the market, which is quite ironic when we had the whole Cold War of the U.S. telling us that government is the problem and free market economics is the most optimum way to run economic affairs in the world. This is highly, highly ironic.
Well, Brent Badowski, let's look at really what has transpired. I mean, to U.S.'s dismay, their attempts in some regards have failed. Looking at South Korea and Japan, they have given U.S. officials a polite brush off, even though they're saying that we're going to follow through. But at this point, that really has not transformed itself. We have, of course, India and China. Well, there are reports that they may even increase their purchases. How could U.S. expect these leaders to go against their national interests? I mean, really, looking at, for example, Timothy Geithner visiting China, telling them to cut the oil exports from Iran. Was that logical?
Well, it was logical from a conundrum of the strange way we have to look at it, because the sanctions are viewed in the United States as an alternative to war and as a means of preventing or persuading the Israelis not to initiate a war. They are illogical from the point of view of common sense. And the bottom line of the problem is, I think that what everyone needs to do is to come up with political and economic solutions between all of the different countries.
Mr. Tachin, let me go to you and ask you this question, which has been tossed around, if there's any truth to it, and that is the United States maybe using their reserves in order, at least trying, to keep prices low. At the same time, other countries in Europe using their reserves in hopes that by the time July comes around, that things politically may have settled. Is that the case?
Well, I don't know any announcements yet on the use of what you are saying, the so-called strategic petroleum reserves. That is a large quantity of oil in different countries which are members of the International Energy Agency, the OECD, industrialized world. And the that strategic reserve is managed by the International Energy Agency with headquarters in Paris. And that has been there since the 1970s. And the idea is that if there is a major disruption, then they could use this strategic reserve. And every year, twice, they do a simulation that in case of disruption, what country should produce what from where. It's these resources include these reserves, include both crude and petroleum products. They are in different countries in the Far East, Japan, Australia, New Zealand, in Europe, and United States and North America.
But in America, the lawmakers in America are asking Barack Obama to tap into the reserves to stop the oil prices from going up. Is there any validity to that?
Yes.
How much of a chance there?
I am coming to that. Yes, I am coming to that. This was employed. The use of this strategic reserves have been really for major disruptions, political or hurricanes, natural disasters. For the first time after the problems in Libya and
right.
the disruption
Mr.
of exports Tachin, from
I
Libya,
I sincerely apologize. Unfortunately, we ran out
this.
Of time. My apologies. Manisher Tachin
right.
From the Center for Global Energy Studies, thank you very much there from London. I also like to thank Brent Podolsky, columnist at The Hill, from Washington, writer and journalist Joshua Blakeley. Thank you very much from Calgary, Canada. And thank you for watching another edition of the Press TV News Analysis. Do send us any comments or suggestions, newsroom@presstv.ir. For Mikhail Vitavoy and the entire team, it's goodbye.